Good afternoon. This is Dale Allison. You're listening to Storm Watch here on BPN Radio, and we are thankful that you are making us part of your day, and especially the afternoon here on Friday. I want to cover a brief subject that we touched on last week. I had indicated that I had read a book titled Bringing Back the Black-Robed Regiment by Pastor Dan Fisher. And had some folks contact us to say, thank you for the information. You failed to tell us how we could get a copy. So I've got that information for you today. You can contact Tate Publishing. They're in Oklahoma, and they have a toll-free number here, 1-888-361-9473, and ask them for Bringing Back the Black-Robed Regiment by Pastor Fisher. And I'm sure they'll send you a copy. I really don't know the cost. I bought my copy at a presentation put on by Pastor Fisher, and which was excellent. I would certainly encourage any ministerial groups or church who wanted to host several ministers to contact Pastor Fisher about bringing his program there. It's a great program, great in historical content and spiritual context of the ministers who were involved. Many of you may have seen the movie The Patriot, Mel Gibson movie, and you may remember that a challenge was given to this particular church where the minister, on hearing the challenge, he stepped down himself and said he was going to fight along with the men of his congregation. And as a result of that, they got involved in fighting for our liberty, our freedom from Great Britain during the time of the Revolution. That was somewhat based on historical fact, but certainly there was some creative license in the making of that movie. But here, Pastor Fisher gives you the straight skinny on what went on by doing a great deal of research from letters, documents, newspapers at the time, to be able to share with you the conscience and the commitment of many of these ministers became part of this black-robed regiment. And if you enjoy it as much as I did, then maybe sow a copy to your pastor so that he can likewise be challenged by the material that's in there. Today, we're going to have maybe one topic that we're going to touch on, but it's going to have several aspects to it because it's a topic of policies. And again, this is something you wouldn't have expected a church 20, 30 years ago to be involved with. What policies would they have? But because of the change and what's gone on over the last 30 or 40 years, it has been incumbent upon a church to act like a business in certain aspects. And one of those aspects is to have policies that make employees aware of how they're to conduct themselves around the church. You say, hey, they should know. Well, maybe they should. Maybe all of us should. But the truth is, not everybody knows, or if they do, not everybody pays attention to it. To a certain extent, there are individuals who come around a church for, if nothing else, being able to be a part of a program that they think maybe does not have the same restrictions that they would find in the corporate world. I know after the big daycare scandal out in California, one of the things that became paramount for almost every state in the United States was to require criminal background checks on any potential employee of the daycare. And so immediately, those folks who knew they were going to be picked up if they applied at a daycare suddenly came into the church to be involved in their nursery, their preschool, or their daycare. And at that time, churches were not brought underneath that specific guideline, and so they were not necessarily required to be doing criminal record checks on those that would be working within the church. Many of you have been around churches that are so desperate for nursery workers that a person could literally come to church the first day, walk in, and one of the greeters in conversation with him would find out that they would comment that they had previous experience in the nursery, and before they could even get to the sanctuary, they were taken downstairs and pressed into service. Because that at one time was not one of the favored places to be assigned to. But if you were a pedophile, what better place to go than to the church, because they're desperate for nursery workers and preschool, and they would bring things in. And what we found in the late 80s and early 90s was there was a great many lawsuits brought against the church with humongous judgments coming out against them, and churches were literally destroyed. They were literally wiped out. They had insurance, probably not enough. They probably thought they had $1 million coverage and that was going to cover everything. And many of these judgments came back at $20, $30, $50, $100 million. On the one hand, you couldn't begrudge the jury for coming back like that. I mean, of all the places in the world young children should be safe, it's the church. I mean, Jesus said, bring the little children to me. So back in that day, who better to protect them than Jesus, and would operate the same today? Why shouldn't our children that are under the covering of our church, whether it's daycare, nursery, Sunday school, whatever, they should be completely protected and beyond anything happening. And so when you find that a church had been slothful, that they had not done anything to look at the background check of this individual, be they male or female, and allowed them to just come in and arbitrarily take over working with these children, and that they had molested them, then you could see a juror sitting there saying, well, why should this church even be in existence if they're not going to protect children? And so they were. They were, these judgments came out. Of course, when the insurance company has maxed out, I mean, you know, they could write a check for $1 million and walk away. Well, then who's going to pay the rest of it, of a $10 million judgment? The church is. And how's that going to happen? Well, for one, is anybody who was aware that they had a big mortgage burning ceremony at the church to say we paid off, then you can go right after the church. It'll be auctioned off. And that money used to pay the plaintiff in the lawsuit for damages. And if there was some individual responsibility on those who were worked at the church, then maybe even individually they would go after some of those folks. So I think one of the biggest things that we're going to combine a couple things here with the criminal background checks, but we're going to talk about insurance. Almost every church has insurance coverage. Now, over the years, that policy has changed. And you may have bought a policy 10, 20 years ago, and all you've done is just renewed it each year. Paid whatever additional premium came down the pike, and you haven't maybe looked at that policy or contacted your agent, had him come, him or her come by and meet with you and discuss where you are on that policy. Because of those high judgments that came about in the late 80s, early 90s, and into the early 2000s. Child molestation, child abuse, those things were taken out of the basic policy. And you now have to bring them in as a rider to your policy. So you need to check, number one, to see, am I covered for child abuse or child molestation? I would say if you had the old policy and those features were dropped out and you never bought a rider or paid an additional premium to add that coverage, then you're out there without that coverage. And that's pretty scary. It might be something that you want to talk to your agent about. If you're a board member or you're on the finance committee at the church, that's something you might want to mention and say, hey, maybe we need to have our insurance guy come in and just talk to us as a group and explain to us what is coverage covered and what is not covered on our policy, because it's important. You know, not only do you have to cover church vehicles and those people who would be driving those vehicles, and yes, you want to make sure that you're covered in terms of the building, destruction by fire, tornado, whatever, and to make sure that you're covered for somebody who slips and falls and hurts themselves on church property. So you want to make sure liability coverage is there. But you also want to make sure that you're covered for theft. Oh, well, we're covered for theft. We got that. Well, are you covered for embezzlement? I don't know. Are we? Well, you need to check your policy. Do you do counseling? Oh, yeah, we do. Okay, well, then you might want to check, are you covered for any mistakes that might be made in counseling? That's a big issue today. And I think you need to look and say, what are the things that could befall us here as a church in terms of liability? And are we covered for that? Are you covered for field trips? your children's church, going to the park for a picnic one day. What about your youth group going on a missionary trip overseas, running down to South or Central America, or maybe even going to Southeast Asia to do some missionary work? Or maybe they're just going and becoming hands and feet to help some missionaries who are busy in other countries to construct new buildings or to help with the church facilities. Are you covered for that? What does your insurance agent say? Maybe you need to be. Maybe you need to make sure that your insurance agent is in a position to provide coverage for the youth group through their parents to maybe buy a supplemental policy. And one other thing that you might want to just check with them. You notice I'm not recommending any companies. I'm not. I don't sell insurance. Don't make any commissions off of insurance. You might want to look at what's called an umbrella policy. I'm going to give you a personal testimony here from the past, working with one of the churches that I was involved with. We had an umbrella policy. And the church made a mistake. They let somebody come into their school as a teacher without having done a criminal background check. And so long and short of the story was that he was accused of and eventually found guilty of molesting five young boys. And when that happened, immediately one of the parents filed a lawsuit. And the remaining parents were attendees at this church, so they were reluctant to do anything. The one that did file was not an attendee of the church. So we began to try to resolve the matter, and the insurance company that we had a policy with was extremely proactive, and I mean, they immediately contacted all of the parents who were involved and had child psychologists ready. The church offered spiritual counseling to the parents as well as the children. And they jumped on top of this quickly. And so as it progressed, the insurance companies, claims adjusters, began to work to try to bring a resolution to this lawsuit. And so we had a basic $1 million policy. But we had a $5 million umbrella, which meant that essentially we had $6 million of insurance coverage before we had to provide any money. Fortunately, the suit was settled for less than $4 million. And so the church didn't have to pay any money. The money that was paid on behalf of the church via the settlement was all provided by the insurance company. Now, what would have happened if we hadn't had the $5 million umbrella? A settlement of $4 million was done, and that would have meant church was on the hook for $3 million because we had a basic $1 million policy. So there, in just one fell swoop, the church more than paid itself for the umbrella policy that they had purchased. It was a tremendous benefit to them. And it's something that overall, it was cheaper to have a $1 million basic policy and a $5 million umbrella than it would have been to have bought a $6 million policy. Now, whether that's true today, premium-wise, I don't know. All I'm providing is just an idea to say, look into that. Lawsuits are still going on with churches. Churches are still making mistakes that allow these lawsuits to occur. And the extent of the damage to the local church could be significant without an umbrella policy. So let's just pass that along for what it's worth. I think it's something that every church should sit down and look at. I understand with every church that there is a budget. You have to look at the budget. You have to say, how much premium can we afford? And that's certainly something that you have to look at. But I would say it's very important to have competent and quality insurance. And so I would be encouraging everybody to at least look into it. $1 million is nothing today. At one time, that was a lot of insurance. But today, it's not much. And I know that almost every state in the United States has some sort of minimum basic requirement for you to be able to even drive a car. And in some instances, that's pretty low, $25,000 coverage. Well, that really is a drop in the bucket. But I'm sure that everybody has to look at what the cost of insurance is, and are we going to price our drivers out of the market by being exceptionally high? So it is something that you all have to take into consideration in your insurance purchases. I would also mention to you that sometimes those umbrella policies come available for individuals. You can have your own individual policy, but you can also get an individual umbrella on top of that, which again might be a pretty good opportunity to just review that with your insurance person. That's what they're there for. If all we do is meet with them, we initially buy the policy, and then every time the insurance company bills us, we just write a check. We're not doing ourselves a lot of good because there's a variety of things that happen. Building replacement costs may go up. You may have an insurance policy that says if your house burns down, it'll pay you $150,000. But geez, it would cost you $300,000 to replace it. So maybe you need to talk with your insurance agent and say, hey, am I really adequately covered if my house burns down? If a tornado hits and destroys it, am I going to be able to build my house back where it was in the same look for what I'm going to get from y'all's insurance company? And if they say, well, no, your house is $300,000, we're only going to give you $150,000. Well, what does it cost me to be able to get 100, the whole 300. So while the church is doing some reviewing, maybe it's a good idea for you to do some reviewing too. Something that we all need to do and to think about it, because we have a variety of coverages. We've got health coverage, we may have dental coverage, we may have vision coverage. We have our own home insurance, homeowners insurance that covers destruction of property as well as injuries to individuals on our property. We all have car insurance, and it comes with a variety of levels of coverage, 100,000, 300,000. That's pretty good coverage, but it's probably a drop in the bucket to what's going on today. So just maybe something we look at, understanding that we all have to be controlled to a certain extent by budgetary constraints. But let's just try to do as the best we can with our budget to get the maximum amount of benefit and coverage with regard to insurance. Let me look at other policies that we need to give consideration to, especially from a business standpoint. We've already talked about the criminal record checks that we're going to do with regard to employees of all sorts, especially those who would be involved in youth ministry, nursery, preschool, etc. Think about not just those that you might be hiring, but for your volunteers as well. To be able to look at those folks and get a background check on them. Yes, you may not be paying them, and they're great volunteers, but a volunteer can bring a church down just like an employee can. If they do something stupid, if they do something goofy, if they do something criminal in nature, what's going to happen? As an employee or as a volunteer, you're responsible for them. And so if they do something wrong that causes harm to a young child, you'll be on the hook as a church. You'll be on the hook for that. And that's something that, again, you need to make sure that not only are your employees going to be covered on this insurance policy, but what about your volunteers? Last thing you want to find out is, no, you didn't have coverage for your volunteers, so that means church is on the hook to pay for the damages done by that volunteer. Folks, I'm going to take just a momentary break here to let you know that you're listening to BPN Radio, and in particular, you're listening to Storm Watch. I'm Dale Allison. I hope you're enjoying so far our conversation about policies, and continue that. But I want to remind you that BPN Radio operates off of the donations of good people like yourself. It's an invaluable service being done here by BPN Radio, not only with their programs that they have, but also the prayer that's going on here, the communication that's being made, breakout church on Sunday mornings, the rest of the day with giving preachers, especially young preachers, millennial and next-gen preachers that are out and now giving a voice to them is something that BPN Radio is doing, and it's not only does it give them an opportunity, but it gives you, the listener, an opportunity to hear different viewpoints on the Word of God, not contrary, but just a different approach and explanation of those. And it's a great thing. So the value of that, what's it worth? What's it worth you to be able to tune in during the day and the evening hours and have someone that you can join in with prayer? How about being able to tune in to some of the specialty shows and getting certain information and direction for different things that are done? What about the marketplace on Saturday, to be able to hear business ideas and what people are doing in business as an encouragement to other business people or young entrepreneurs? What's the value of that? I can't tell you what that is. It's invaluable. But you have an opportunity to ask the Lord, hey, how can I support and keep BPN Radio on the air? And just click over to the donate button, click on it, provide it over the internet, or write a check, send it to the address that's given there, and support BPN Radio. They're doing a great job. Your support is essentially saying, hey, we believe you're doing a good job and we want to be part of it. Be part of the BPN team. Okay, we've talked about insurance, talked about the background checks. Do you have a collection policy? Does your church have a collection policy? Well, what's a collection policy? Well, the collection policy essentially covers the collection of monies from the time that it's picked up in the sanctuary to the time that it is deposited in the bank. That policy has to do with who is responsible for taking the money from the sanctuary, taking it to the accounting room, having a group of two or three people on a rotating basis who are there to count the money and to record the money that is there, and then package it up into a bank deposit bag and place that in a secure location. Then Monday morning, another team comes in, opens the bag before it's taken to the bank, verifies the numbers that are reflected on the collection statement, and then takes it to the bank and makes the deposit, and the deposit ticket and the two counting reports should equal the same amount of money. But what does that do? That proves to Uncle Sam, if they want to come in, that nobody's skimming money off the top. I think it's also a good precaution to have a security camera in that room that is in a position to look at the table and look where they're counting. Because you're going to be counting several things. You're going to be counting change. That's somebody's responsibility. Counting bills is another responsibility. Then you're going to be, the person is going to be responsible for the envelopes. Some churches still use envelopes. Which may contain a check or may contain cash. And on the outside of the envelope, there is a place for the person to write down what their gift is, $10, $5, $20, $50, $100, whatever. And then you're totaling that up then you're going to open those envelopes up and you're going to add to the checklist. Some people just drop checks in the plate. You're going to take the checks out of those envelopes, but you're also going to verify whether the numbers are correct. I noted on my envelope, here's $40. But, oh, the check's for $45. Well, then you want to make sure that's shown, that how the policy works. Because believe it or not, there are folks who steal money from the church. They do it right in the collection room. Years ago, we had a collection policy in place. And rather large church that I was working with, and I received a call from the pastor indicating there was a problem with the collection. It just seemed like that there was a full house of people attending the church, and yet it appeared that the tithes and offerings were way off financially from what it would appear that the congregation was doing. And the business administrator at the church was on the collection team. And what made it even more suspicious is he went on vacation. When he went on vacation, there was $5,000 more each week in the collection than had been previously in there. Well, some investigation, and here's what we found out. We found out that the people who did their jobs, the one who did the checks and the ones who did the coins and the one who did the cash, he had them write their figures down on the collection sheet. But he had them write it in pencil. And since he was the one who ended up packaging everything up and putting it into the safe, what he was able to do was he would take a pen and go over the figures except for the cash. And he would fundle out up to $5,000 a week in cash. And then he would write over the pencil version with the new figure that he wanted to be there. So everything always balanced, except it was not correct. And he got away with about $500,000 before he was caught, because it had gone on for a couple of years. Security camera would have helped, because we would have seen then what was being done. If any of the other collection team, of course they didn't think anything about it because he was the church administrator, but if they had come in and said, hey, why aren't we filling these out in pen instead of pencil? So it's important when you have a collection policy to make sure the understanding is everybody writes in ink. A little harder to change those figures, and it also makes it difficult if it is changed to make it appear that everything's fine, but it's not. Collection policy is important. One of the big policies that over the years that churches are currently being sued on is sexual harassment policy. You would think of all the policies that could go on at a church, sexual harassment would not be one of them, but it obviously is. sexual harassment is generally has to do with employees, the relationship of employees with one another. It also has to do with counseling and the fact that counselor may be in a position to sexually harass a counselee. And the concept of it is fairly simple. Harassment that's based upon sex is in violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Essentially, harassment is unwelcome sexual advances, requests for sexual favors, and other verbal or physical contact of a sexual nature. It's considered sexual harassment when all of those take, one or more of those take place, where it appears that submission to such conduct is made either explicitly or implicitly as a term or condition of the individual's employment. Or as a basis of decisions affecting that employment, raises, advancements, etc. And such conduct has the purpose of unreasonably interfering with the individual's work or performance, which creates a hostile or an offensive work environment. Now, there is proof that has to come with that. Someone is claiming sexual harassment. Now, remember, consent is not really a defense here. If I'm the pastor and I'm counseling with one of the parishioners, essentially I'm in a position of authority. That person is looking at me as an authority figure. And that I'm wanting to receive information on helping me to grow as a Christian. I'm always amazed that people come in with that goal in mind and end up having sex with the pastor. And I'm trying to figure out, gee, you know, how did that come about that you figured that was going to help your growth as a Christian? But I'm not there, and I don't know. Probably easy to for me to say. I mean, I'm not there. I don't know, you know, what is said or done, but it happens. It happens that secretary who has a job there at the church and loves what she does is secretary to the music minister, and he lets it be known that if she's a lot more friendly to him and is interested in certain activities, that not only is she going to be able to keep her job, but she's going to be able to get some advancement and a raise and some monetary help. Those would all be possible sexual harassment that's done and could end up in a lawsuit against the church with damages being provided to the victims. Well, they consented. Well, that's, again, this type of situation where we're talking the relationship between people, that's not a defense. You know, it's not a defense to say, well, Mrs. Smith allowed this conduct to go on. She could have told me no and I'd have walked away. Easy to say, no, that probably if she'd have said no, you'd have made life difficult on her. That's the other thing. What if Mrs. Smith said no? And then all of a sudden, she's constantly put under pressure. The boss no longer treats her fairly, starts making demands, not sexual demands, but other demands that she do this, she do that, the other. And all of a sudden, she feels like this is a hostile place to work. I can't work here anymore. Well, then that's what we were talking about here. It created a hostile environment. And so even if you didn't consent, they could make it so difficult for you to stay with some of the conduct that they would do that it's just hostile. You know, that includes unwanted touching. You walk in and your secretary sort of shaking your shoulders and you come up and decide you're going to give a shoulder massage. Well, is that sexual harassment? Certainly could be considered. You can sit there and say, well, I was just being a nice guy. Well, maybe. Or maybe that was a prelude to something else. You know, again, we come back to our insurance. Not only do you have to have a policy that everybody reads and understands. Everybody understands what the sexual harassment policy is. Generally, those policies in part will say if you're undergoing something like that, there is a sort of a chain of command that you can contact. Well, yeah, but who are you going to contact if it's the pastor who's doing the harassing? Well, such a policy should give an opportunity for somebody on the elder board, the deacon board, or the church board is an alternative. The pastor can be the guy for everybody under him, but if it turns out that the pastor is one doing the harassing, that you have the ability to go to this person and say, hey, pastor's harassing me. He's doing this and this and this. That policy should provide an avenue that you can bring your complaint to someone who has some responsibility and would be able to correct that activity as it reflects upon you. Let's make sure that is something that is placed in there. And I'm sure the insurance company is going to demand some sort of sexual harassment policy. You can't just prepare a policy, stick it in the file, and believe that everybody by osmosis is going to understand it. You know, that sexual harassment policy, once it's prepared, you make a copy, you give it to each person and say, hey, I want your signature on this that you have read, understand, and agree to abide by it. So it's turned back into you, and so you have an attestation by each of the employees, be they male, female, whatever, and you've got them in the file to where you can say, okay, everyone knows what that policy is, and you're expected to live by it. Doesn't do any good to hand it out if you don't have some commitment on their part and verification on their part that they have read it and will abide by it. Another policy that, again, you wouldn't think that you would need to do, but has become important here of late, is what would be called a social media policy. And this has to do with emails, Facebook posts, Twitter, Instagram, all of those other things that those of us who are technologically challenged don't get involved with too often. But the younger generation is, that's something they do all the time. They send out tweets. I send out emails when I have to. I'm answering questions and helping clients to resolve certain things. I am not a tweeter. There's enough strange tweets that go out that constantly have to be apologized for that, it's essentially like the old saying, better be silent and thought to be a fool than open our mouth and confirm it. So, I don't intend to be a tweeter. Why are we talking about a social media policy? Because employees are a representative of the church. And so if they send out a tweet, if they send out an email, making a Facebook post, and they send something out, and you're known to be a member, this showed up, shouldn't say recently, it was last year, with regard to ESPN. One of their commentators decided to send out a tweet that essentially was against our president. And, people would say, hey, she has every right to say it. There's freedom of speech. You know what? You're 100% correct. There is freedom of speech. But there are also consequences that come with that freedom. And so when you are a representative of a company, or in this case, a representative of the church, you're the youth minister, or you're the praise and worship leader, you're the associate pastor, and you send out a tweet critical of your public officials, critical of somebody in the church, or you share a statement that, let's everybody pray for Mary Lou because I saw her with Bobby Joe the other night at such and such a location, or coming out of the honky-tonk. That's information that you have no business in sharing, at least on a public stage. So what are people going to think? Either the church is a place that a person can't come and confess a sin without being publicly reprimanded. So you've put the church in a bad spot. But these policies control what employees can do and say and what they can watch. You have an opportunity, which we should be in a position to be able to cover. If I'm providing, I'm the church, and I'm providing you with a computer to do your work at the church, I should be able to expect that you're not going to be watching pornography. And I also should be able to come in and be able to pop onto your computer and double check at any time whether you're watching pornography. Did you see that a couple of years ago, where the EPA, some 60% of the employees there in Washington were spending 50 to 70% of their time watching pornography? Well, God forbid that takes place in the church. Such a policy should be made available so that become an opportunity to let people know, hey, I want you to use this computer for church work. I'm not interested in you sending emails to your girlfriend. I'm not interested in you trying to handle an internet affair on here. I'm not interested in you doing this and that. And if you are, that's grounds for termination. And so a social media policy would set that out. Once again, everybody gets a copy. Everybody reads it, signs it, gives it back, and says, hey, this is where we are. We agree to live by that policy. And it's much easier to terminate them if you have to. Okay, we got to most of the policies today, but there's a few others that we'll talk about maybe in another week or two. I appreciate you spending time with us here today. And let's just ask the Lord's blessing on as we finish up. Father, we thank you and we praise you for the opportunity that you've given us to be able to alert our brothers and sisters as to the things that the church needs to do to protect itself in these latter days when potential lawsuits are popping up. Lord, let them receive this in the manner that it's given. Give them an opportunity to look over what they have and to maybe provide an opportunity to update the policies that they have to make sure their insurance, that they have the right and proper protection. All of this we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Folks, thank you for letting us be a part of your day, and look forward to seeing you next Friday. God bless.